In late 1968, the New South Wales government set the blood alcohol level at 0.8, but there was some resistance to that move by the road safety fraternity. Harry Kempkin remembers.
We wanted to bring it down to 0.5 initially because we knew that the risk of doing something wrong increased rapidly after 0.5, so we wanted to bring that in straight away, but the government was very reluctant to move. They felt that that wouldn't be respected by people who didn't yet realise that such a low level of alcohol can affect your ability to drive safely. And they were also concerned that a lot of the people and a lot of the ministers in Parliament at the time were partial to a drink. And I had heard it said that we'll never get through this call because too many of us like a drink after the House adjourns.
Soames Job adds,
I had a view, and a number of other people around me had a view, that in fact the evidence suggested it would work if it was introduced effectively and carefully. And we believe that the real deterrence effect of enforcement comes down to convincing people that they will be caught without actually having to catch them, and that's the general deterrence effect. In road safety, the general deterrence effect is much more important than the specific deterrence effect. The specific one is where you actually catch an individual and they cop penalties for that behaviour. But the people you don't catch and don't do it because they're frightened they will be caught actually give you more road safety gain. And our research suggested that many people believed that even though they'd been drinking, their driving was extremely good. Their skill level was still extremely good, and so they believed they would never be caught by police because they would never come to attention because they were driving well anyway. And that overconfidence was part of the problem. When we came to asking people about random breath testing, we actually got two very interesting results. One was people were very concerned by the possibility because they believed suddenly they would be caught drink driving where otherwise they would not be. And that really gave us the general deterrence hint that it would be there. Other people had quite a different interpretation and wanted it brought in. And they said things to us like, well, you're not really regarded as a man unless you can drink drive in this society. But actually, I don't want to. If you bring random breath testing in, that will give me an excuse to tell my mates why I'm not going to do it. Because despite the fact that I'm incredibly good at it, I would get caught. And so there were two avenues which really said this would work. If we could convince people there was a high chance of being caught. And so introducing it as a very high-profile, almost self-advertising event on the road with buses and police and lights, as well as a very large TV and media-based advertising campaign, was the right way to do it. And it was introduced late in 1982.
Mervyn Lane is a former police superintendent and commander who joined the police force as a cadet in 1955. He recalls the initial police attitude to breath testing.
Well, they were reluctant to become involved in it. That's the impression that I get, mainly because it was boring. And the fact that, again, we go back to arrest rates and detection rates. The arrest rate was very low. It was less than 0.5% of the total number of people that were breath tested. The equipment that they had in those days was fairly crude. We had old ex-government buses. They had large generators that they had to manhandle on and off the bus to provide them with some light. And they had to assemble at the police station, in other words, come back off the road in their vehicles and then go back out with the bus and work it that way. So to them, it was time-consuming, and to them, they didn't see the results. And by that, I mean the results in the number of people arrested.